Australian kids brace for a world-first experiment as they're booted off social media. The Prime Minister joins us this morning on our final program of a huge political year. I'm David Spears. Welcome to Insiders. Teenagers aren't thrilled, but the government is confident parents are on board for a bold reform aimed at protecting children from online harm. From Wednesday, under-16s can't hold a social media account. Some have already been shut down in advance of the ban taking effect. The Communications Minister has been proudly promoting Australia's initiative, but has also been forced to defend some very expensive airfares to attend an event in New York. The price tag revealed during a final round of Senate estimates hearings for the year.
Politics is well and truly winding down. This week has been dominated by the Senate estimates process.
We'll see if we can find you on notice, because it is not a secret.
Okay, well, we'll have to agree to disagree.
And yet you come here and think that you can just fob the Senate off.
We're not fobbing the Senate off.
Yeah, check that. And then...
We have a brag fact-checking unit.
I'm sure you do.
I think many Australians will not buy that.
Please do not make false
Senator
allegations
Henderson,
in relation
Senator Henderson,
to that.
Let's just start. Well, it's only 9:30. Let's just keep moving,
The Minister
moving,
needs
okay?
to be
no.
direct.
So we've lost lighting here.
Why does it cost almost $1 million and is it gold-plated?
Australians under the age of 16 will be banned from social media.
We can protect Generation Alpha from being sucked into purgatory by predatory algorithms, behavioural cocaine.
I have no confidence in this working.
I think we have to be balanced and nuanced in this discussion.
There is this margin of error, probably over 30% of a failure rate.
We have to give this a crack.
Annika Wells has also been forced to explain a high cost to taxpayers to spruik the ban.
Well, the reason you know all those things is because we're transparent about them.
We've got a part-time communications minister, but a full-time frequent flyer.
I thought it was okay to sting the taxpayers $100,000 for flights to New York for a six-minute speech on the sidelines of the UN.
That event fueled a global momentum in this space.
Where is this minister? Who left her post in the middle of a 000 crisis?
You don't think that was expensive for airfares?
I've answered your question.
My guest this morning is the Prime Minister. Our panel coming up and being our final show of the year. Who will take out the Matt Price moment? We have some hilarious and awkward entries. And we'll look back at the highs and lows of 2025. First, let's check what's making news. Another travel expense story this morning. The Nine newspapers report Annika Wells charged taxpayers nearly $3,000 so her husband and children could join her for a weekend at the Thredbo ski resort. The Minister for Sport was there for a Paralympics Australia event and used the family reunion entitlement, which allows MPs to fly family members to be with them. She told Sky News her family went skiing, but it was all within the rules.
I used my family reunion entitlement within the guidelines, as every parliamentarian can do. I appreciate people want it scrutinised. Happy to keep answering your questions.
The Nine newspapers report Cabinet will meet tomorrow to consider a national gas reserve, with the three major gas exporters at odds over how it should work. The government wants more Australian gas reserved for domestic use to help bring down power prices. And up to 16 homes have been lost to bushfires on the New South Wales central coast and mid-north coast. Coolawong on the central coast and Milson's Gully in the Upper Hunter bore the brunt yesterday afternoon. The Prime Minister visited the National Emergency Management Agency headquarters here in Canberra about an hour ago. The Prime Minister is with me now. Anthony Albanese from the honeymoon to the Insiders studio. Congratulations, firstly, on
Good morning, David. Thank you very much. And can I take the opportunity to thank Australians for the very warm wishes that we have received. It's been quite heartening, and it was a wonderful marriage. And then a four-day honeymoon is short, but it was wonderful to have a bit of time off together.
Well, that's good to hear. I mentioned before you've come here, you've popped in at the Emergency Australia Management headquarters. This situation on the central coast and the mid-north coast, it's not a great start to the summer, is it?
No, it's not. And New South Wales in general is facing quite a difficult season, we suspect. Houses lost yesterday, fortunately no loss of life. That, of course, is always a priority. But fires burning as well in the Upper Hunter. There's also been some issues in Tasmania and in Western Australia, in around the Kimberley region as well in the Pilbara. So this summer, of course, like all summers that would appear in recent times, is going to be a difficult one. But New South Wales in particular has a range of preconditions, if you like, for being quite a difficult one.
Let's get to the issue that many families are no doubt discussing this weekend, the social media ban that's coming in from Wednesday. You've acknowledged this won't be 100% effective, but it will make a difference. How will you be measuring the success of this?
I think it is a success already, David, because what's happening is that parents are having this discussion with their young ones. We had a discussion with some of the kids who are visiting the studio here this morning. That will happen. That will happen. It's happening in schools. It's happening with parents having those discussions with children. Mm. It's happening as well to hold these social media giants to account. Anyone who reads the stories of parents that are in the Sunday newspapers today who've lost loved ones would have their heart torn. This is a change that hasn't come from government. This is a change that has come from parents taking what is a personal tragedy and channeling that into wanting no other parents to go through the heartbreak that they've experienced.
If it turns out, though, that a lot of kids are getting around this through whatever means, what will you do?
Well, we'll continue, of course, to monitor, but we've said very clearly that this won't be perfect, just like chances are last night was Saturday night, somewhere in Australia, somewhere under 18, got a drink in a pub. But it's the right thing to do for society to express its views, its judgment about what is appropriate. And there is no doubt when we look at the rise in mental health issues faced by young people, when we look at the social harm which has been caused by social media, that we want kids to have the opportunity to enjoy their childhood. And we want parents to be empowered as well to have that discussion. And it's important here to recognise that Australia isn't going alone. On January 1, change kicks in Malaysia. We have New Zealand. The European Union, in the past fortnight, has adopted a resolution moving towards this change going forward as well. So this is a global issue that the world is dealing with.
You had an event to that end. You had an event on the sidelines of the United Nations in New York, which brings us to the travel bill for Annika Wells, your minister who was there along with you, Penny Wong and so on. It turns out nearly $100,000 was spent just on flights for the minister, a staffer and a public servant to attend with her. Does that seem like a wise use of taxpayers' money to you?
Well, this was a really important event, David. It was an important event that led to the European Union taking action. You were at the event, David, and one of the comments that I heard from various UN officials and other world leaders who were there, it was addressed by Ursula von der Leyen of the European Union, by Prime Minister Mitsotakis of Greece. We have Prime Minister Rambuka of Fiji. We have world leaders there listening. And the comments that were heard afterwards were, I've been to lots of forums at the United Nations. This is the first time I've been to a forum that has changed my mind. Mm. And the most powerful speech given there was by Emma Mason, who spoke about losing her young daughter, Tilly. Mm. And if you didn't have a tear in your eye during that speech, then you need to check.
Yeah, agree with that.
Whether your heart was there.
It was a very powerful speech. I suppose the question is, was the importance of having Annika Wells there worth that sort of expense to the taxpayer?
Well, Annika Wells was, of course, doing her job as the communications minister, who's in charge of this world-leading legislation passed with bipartisan support, to give credit particularly to Peter Dutton when he was opposition leader. And it was an important event. And it wasn't just the event there, it was then the follow-up of people wanting to have meetings, have discussions, how is this going to work, what can we do to get buy-in here. And when you've got Australia, a middle power, taking on these global giants, then I tell you what, David, it has helped that we have others in our corner now rather than the potential which was there for us to be isolated by these giants, the big tech companies who have a lot of power and influence.
I guess the problem here with this flight was that the plan was that the minister was going to go on your plane, but was caught up with the Optus 000 problem here in Australia, then had to make a last minute booking to get to New York. You or your office would have had to approve that. Is that right? Did you?
Of course.
So you did approve this?
Of course.
You thought 34 grand for a flight was okay?
Well, we spoke. I didn't get all the receipts, David. What happened was I was travelling. We spoke on the Friday night. We spoke again on the Saturday morning before I departed and made the decision that Minister Wells would stay.
So this was your call?
To deal with these issues. Well, we did it. As a government, we make calls, David.
But on this decision to go ahead with that flight, that's your decision?
We make decisions as a government, David. And Minister Wells stayed back, and therefore it was, I assume, you know, I don't, this will come as a shock, David, but I don't, you know, ring up and make bookings myself.
But you or your office have to approve that flight cost.
Of course, of course. And we spoke on the morning.
Right.
And Minister Wells travelled. It was a very significant event for Australia.
The other story that's come to light today, as I mentioned, is the use of a family reunion entitlement for a weekend at Thredbo. Annika Wells says she had ministerial duties there, did some skiing as well. Was that an appropriate use of the family reunion entitlement?
Well, what you've left off there, David, was what she was there for, which was for a Paralympic event. There was an announcement of herself as sports minister, just like we've made announcements here at the Australian Institute of Sport. We made an announcement about the doubling of funding for para sports as well.
But is it, I'm asking about the use of the family reunion entitlement. Is that what you'd use it for?
Well, there are family reunion entitlements available. All of the travel was within guidelines.
So you don't have a problem with a weekend at Thredbo?
She was working and there were announcements and there were events there, David.
I just remember, and people with long memories would know, Tony Burke many years ago did repay thousands of dollars to the taxpayer for a family reunion trip to Uluru. It was within the entitlements, but it was copping a lot of criticism. He repaid it. You're not saying Annika Wells should?
I'm saying that it was within entitlements and Annika Wells was working on that trip as sports minister, participating. I think the lifting up of para sports has been something that my government's been very proud of.
Would you have done this?
And that's been driven by Annika Wells.
But would you have done this?
Look, people, there are rules there. And I'm not going to go through each and every one. You know, I've got a big job, David.
Appreciate that. Well, let's talk about some of the other...
They are completely within rules
and
within the guidelines.
Some of the other parts of your job, people are struggling with cost of living, which I suppose is why people do look at things like this and scratch their heads. Part of that cost of living struggle is being felt by older Australians at the moment. Your new aged care reforms came in about a month ago. We're getting quite a bit of feedback through the ABC's Your Say project about this. Some have told us they or their elderly parents are having to pay between $80 and $120 for support to have a shower. And they've had to cut back on the number of showers they're having each week. Is this what you intended?
Well, let's be clear to go back a bit, David. We inherited an aged care system that had been summarised by the Royal Commission's interim findings by its title, neglect. What we have done is to repair the system. The biggest reforms that have been put in place this century began just at the beginning of November, 1 November. And what we have done, firstly, is to make sure we addressed workforce issues by a significant increase in pay. What that's done is stop people leaving the sector. We have some 7 million additional minutes of care for older Australians every single day. We have put in place 99% of the time now there is a nurse back into nursing homes. We have reformed the system with the legislation that was pushed through by Minister Wells
at the end of last year. The concern that's being raised is particularly about the cost of getting support for a shower. And the concern is that this should be regarded clinical care and covered. Should people be having to cut back the number of showers they're having?
No. Well, look, we took advice from the experts on what clinical care was. The government meets 100%
should that be reviewed,
of the cost
though? Should
of,
a shower
clinical,
be considered?
Of clinical care. Well, what we do constantly, David, is we always monitor a new system. That's what we do.
So this is open to change?
That's what we do, David. We monitor and make sure that the system is delivering the care that is intended.
So what's the message then to those who are contacting us, and no doubt MPs as well? Will you review whether showering should be covered?
What we do, David, is more importantly, we review the system at all times to make sure it's delivering the care that is required.
On another cost of living measure, inflation's been edging higher. You need to make a call in the next week or two on whether to extend the household energy rebate beyond the end of this year. It's worth $150 every 6 months. Should families expect that this will continue or not?
Well, what we've said, David, is that this wouldn't be in place forever. This was an interim measure. We'll give consideration to that in the lead up to MyEFO and make an announcement before the end of the year once we make that decision.
I mean, if power bills came down, it'd be a lot easier. You're working out what to do on gas to get more gas into the market. Can you tell us, can you give us any indication what your thinking is about a gas reservation policy? Will all the gas exporters have to keep more here?
Well, we want to make sure, importantly, you've got to address what the objective is. The objective is cheaper gas. And so we're examining that. We won't be making a decision tomorrow, contrary to what has been reported. What we're doing is working those issues through, and we'll make an announcement before the end of the year.
Okay. Will all the gas exporters be covered by what you do?
Well, what we do is we do proper analysis and discussion through a cabinet government that I lead, and we'll do that. We'll have discussions this week, next week. We'll make an announcement before the end of the year.
Prime Minister, it has been quite a year for you.
It has.
You joined us at the start of the year, and I think the political landscape looked very different then. You are now in a commanding political position, and there's been this constant debate about how you use this moment, how ambitious you should be. 7 months on from the election, as this year comes to an end, how are you thinking about this?
Well, I said I went to the National Press Club straight after the election and made it clear that for those people who thought, oh, well, they've got this majority, now they should ignore what they went to the election with, that wasn't what we would do, that this would be a year of delivery. So we've gone through one by one and ticked that off. Paid parental leave extended, superannuation on paid parental leave, the increased wages in the minimum wage, energy support through the batteries program that has made a difference, 20% off student debt. One by one, ticking off the commitments that we made at the election campaign and then delivering it.
Which is important, but you still have a budget stuck in deficit and a tax system that many say, you know, hurts younger people. Are these things you're willing to take on?
Well, I also said in that speech at the very beginning of the term that that wasn't the limit of our ambition. So this year is, if you like, should be seen as a step on the journey, not the destination.
So 2026 then?
The job of reform is never done. And in the lead up to the budget in May next year, we'll give consideration to the full suite of policy measures. The economy, of course, is front and centre, but also social policy. We've got through our environmental reforms on the last sitting day.
On social policy, is gambling advertising on the list?
Well, we've always said that we'll look at always looking to do more. We've done more to tackle that issue than any government since Federation.
But will you do what the Murphy Review recommended on gambling ads?
Well, a lot of those things were about state government and many of the commentators on the Murphy Review haven't actually read it. So there's a range of measures there. We've done a range of measures already, but of course there is more to do.
So the priority for the start of 2026, finally?
Is always the economy. Is always the economy, making sure that we continue to see. We've had eight consecutive quarters of real wage growth. We think that's a good thing. We want to make sure that people continue to earn more and keep more of what they earn. We'll have the tax cuts kicking in July next year and the following July. But we'll also look at the full suite of measures is what my job is to do. I am quite pleased, if you like, that the government has put in place a system through our cabinet committee process where we've gone through literally and ticked off the big commitments that we made to the Australian people. You've got to show the Australian people the faith in democracy is deserved. And if we had have got elected and just thrown all that out, then I think that would have been undermined. But we know there's more to do, and there will also be, inevitably, David, there will be issues arise that we can't foresee now. I look forward to speaking to you at the beginning of next year, and I'm sure some of those will have arisen over the summer break.
We look forward to that as well. Prime Minister, thank you for joining us this morning and through the year, and hope you get a bit of a break.
Thanks very much, David, and Merry Christmas to you and all the Insiders listeners.
Thanks very much. All right, well, coming up, we're going to turn to the other side of politics as well. Look at how Susan Lee and the opposition are finishing what's been a difficult year for the Coalition. Also, the Matt Price moment coming up. That's going to be a bit of fun. And a look back at a huge political year. Let's bring in our panel, though. We are joined this morning by Jacob Greber, Samantha Maiden, Phil Khoury. Very good morning to all of you. For our end-of-year episode, Jacob, let's just go straight to this travel story around Annika Wells. The first response there from the Prime Minister defending the Minister's expenses to New York, to Thredbo. What do you think about it? Is she in trouble here?
I hate the pub test because I don't think you should get a bunch of drunken people in a room to adjudicate things.
Perhaps.
But it's sort of where most people will go.
The kitchen table test.
The kitchen table test. It's a lot of money, no question. She's arguing that it was more than just the emceeing that she did at the UN. It created momentum. Once they saw the Australian government was serious about this, a lot of other countries got interested. So she's very much arguing that she needed to be there to help describe to people in detail. Countries like Sweden and others were very interested in what we were doing. And a lot of the tech giants then took it very seriously. So that's the justification from her. But it's a hell of a lot of money. And we're in a difficult sort of setup now coming into the next year, which is... people will be looking at the budget. We just heard the Prime Minister indicate that it's unlikely to be more energy bill relief. How do you take that away when people see this sort of spending? There'll be that sort of tension.
Yeah, Sam, it feels like one of those events in New York, at least, that the Minister should be at. It's a question of whether it's worth that expense of the flights, which are very expensive flights. And then you've now got this Thredbo trip as well. But she's got the PM's support.
Look, I think we have to just get a bit of facts on the table here, right? So I'm not suggesting that the optics don't look bad, but I think that what we need to remember is what was actually going on at that time. She was meant to be on the Prime Minister's plane. The Prime Minister said that in the interview. What happened was the 000 crisis broke, and then there was a last-minute decision not to put her on the plane and a last-minute discussion among Anthony Albanese, Richard Marles and the Minister about whether she should go at all, right? And that's why the prices were that expensive, because they were literally made a couple of hours before she got on the plane, right?
And UN General Assembly week in New York, everything costs...
Yeah, so that's the first thing. Now, I think that there are some really hard lessons for Annika Wells in this moment. Number one, don't take your kids on family reunion travel to Thredbo. I don't care if it's within the rules. The optics are bad. That's why Tony Burke made that call that he wouldn't do that again after his own family got put in that position. So don't do that. And I think that the other interesting thing that's going on here is that Susan Lee is picking up the weapons that were used to destroy her as a minister. So you will remember that Susan Lee lost her ministry over entitlements. Ultimately, it was found that she hadn't really breached entitlements other than a five-minute comm car drive to go and look at a property that she liked, lost her job. So what's happening now? These things are not organic, right? There's two things going on here. There's been people in the Labor Party that have been... sniffing around and doing FOIs and things on Annika Wells for a bit, and people in the Liberal Party.
In the Labor Party?
Yes. So I'm not saying that all of these stories are from dirt units, but I am saying that some of them are. And this is why you see this momentum starting, because basically what someone's done a couple of months ago, if you go and look at the time when those FOIs are done, you've got the QON, the question on notice material, you've got the FOI material, that's all been stored away and now it's being farmed out. And that's why you get that pressure building.
Phil, we've seen 1,000 of these travel expense stories over the years. They're coming thick and fast for Annika Wells right now. What do you make of them?
Just to the point Samantha made, it is... It'd be worrying for them that some of this may be coming from inside, to sort of suggest jealousy or envy, you know, because Annika's obviously on a fast track. Look, she's young enough and smart enough. This isn't going to destroy her or finish her or anything like that. It is a salient lesson. Just be judicious in your use of these entitlements. Yeah, it is within the rules, but you know, optics is everything in politics. I mean, I contrast it to the Prime Minister's wedding, right? So he had, by wedding standards, a fairly austere wedding, and he paid, even though he lives in the lodge and it's his house and he's entitled, he paid for everything. He paid for the staff, he paid for the glass hire, even the straws that went in the drinks. Mm. Even the politicians who attended the weddings didn't use Comcars. They had to pay for their own Ubers and stuff like that. So
they also wisely... held it at the end of a sitting week all the politicians were there.
Yeah, that's what I said, they're already in town. So, so even though the Prime Minister was in, he could have had a big knees up at Kirribilli, you know, and but with
he
with
could have had a big knees up somewhere else where they all had to fly to it. But like, I'm not criticising.
So it was all about. Yeah, so you know, just because of the entitlements here doesn't mean you use it. And I think that's the lesson for them.
What happens though, and we were talking about this before the program, is that it is really tough on parents who are ministers, particularly with young families, and they get the guilts like Tony Burke did, and then they see some way to take their kids to Ayers Rock. Don't do it.
All right. The substance of why the minister was in New York and the social media ban that's coming. Jacob, what do you think about where this sits right now? Has the government done enough, do you think, in explaining why this is happening? Not everybody loves the idea. Not just kids who are upset, but there are others adults who think this is going to force them into darker corners of the internet or not give them the digital literacy they need to learn. Does sound like the government's pretty confident that most Australians are pretty happy with this move.
I think that's true on the front with parents. There's a question about some of the media companies haven't yet come on board. X and Reddit, I understand, are not yet indicating they will comply, but they've got a few more days yet to get there. It is an interesting question of what does success look like with this policy. It's trailblazing.
It's already been a success, says the Prime Minister.
Well, it's a world first. Let's see how many kids learn about the sort of internet VPNs. Equivalent of a going to a pub with an underage license. VPNs, thank you for revealing it to the nation's young people, although they already know.
Anyway. I reckon they're
probably under.
I just discovered about them this week. No. What does success look like? I think that's going to be an interesting question as we go out into the months.
Yeah. There'll inevitably be stories about, you know, Johnny's on...
Right. And of course, kids will get on, we know that, but will there be a change in the overall level of mental health, self-harm, and the terrible stuff that has come out of this 6 months, a year, 2 years from now? That'll be the test.
Look, the Prime Minister is also right to point to the international momentum on this. There are a growing number of countries who are looking at Australia and going, well, we see a similar community concern and we want to act on this as well. I want to show you that this was an Indonesian official talking at an ASPE conference during the week about what they're doing.
So in Indonesia, if you are 16 years above, then you can have an account for social media, but not when you're 16, if the platform is considered high risk.
And that's a huge country. You know, it's something like 20 million plus kids that are on social media that you're talking about there. You've got Malaysia, PNG, Denmark, Norway, Spain, New Zealand. This is what the social media companies feared all along, wasn't it?
Yeah, it is. And so they'll try and sort of, you know, well, fight it, I guess, if you like. What's interesting with it, Dave, is, I mean, as a parent, I'm all for it, you know, but...
Your kids are too old for it, though, aren't they?
Well, almost. One is. But what's interesting is the government has been quite open up front that this is not going to work immediately. It's going to be difficult. And as the minister said, it's more about you know, the kids who don't have phones yet, the Generation Alpha, I think they call them, you know, the hope is they never have them in the first place. Yeah. They never have this stuff. So
exactly.
how to fix the current tweens and teens.
Yeah.
But what's interesting from a domestic political point is the opposition, I've noticed the last few days, has started to sort of
shift.
Will
yeah.
it
I was going to ask you about this.
Will it to fail?
What's going on here?
Because they want something to fail to work with. I've noticed it's gone from this sort of rock solid support to, oh, it's not going to work.
Well, they're starting that libertarian kind of argument. Yeah. Look, they've waved it through, so they haven't had a problem at the time, but they're leaving the door open to whinge about it later.
Yeah. Yeah.
And look, I'm with you as a parent, and I've got two kids that are old enough that it doesn't affect them, and one daughter who says that you'll rip TikTok out of her clutching hands. But for me, it's really good as a parent to be able to have those conversations, and I think that is a positive thing. And I think if it allows parents to delay those things, they can be very damaging. You know, I've seen children, my own kids, you know, get hold of phones, tell them they're not allowed to have Snapchat. Suddenly, the phone's pinging all day. It's not great. And I think there is some questions about whether or not the use of devices is resulting in lower NAPLAN results and how it's affecting boys and kids. So I think that there is some... It is an experiment. It's an experiment in the same way that we decided without discussion to allow kids access to online pornography without talking about it. At least now we're talking about it.
We're in some steps. I want to come back to the coalition more generally, how they're finishing the year. But with social media, government's taking a hard line. When it comes to artificial intelligence, it is more of a light touch regulation that we saw this week or during the week. They announced their artificial intelligence, their AI national strategy. And it's not, they haven't gone down the path of a new standalone AI act, as the former Minister Ed Husic was talking about. The new Minister Tim Ayres says that they're setting up this safety institute, which will be an advisory body.
Right now, it's going to advise. We're not doubling up or creating any ambiguity about the responsibility of agencies to act. Where they need more powers, they'll get them from this government. We're focused as well on the economic opportunity.
The economic opportunity. Jacob, why have they gone with this approach?
Look, I think they're worried that perhaps as a technology taker, Australia doesn't actually have a lot of leverage in this space. For the big data centre makers, the real big heavy hitters in AI, it's all North America and Europe to a lesser degree. So I think they have to maintain a pretty welcoming stance to get that kind of investment in Australia. And of course, we've got other problems to solve, which is the power that these things require. They require a lot of water. We've got to crack some of those nuts as well. And so I think they don't want to send a message that we've got a high regulation wall that these companies have to get
over.
There's
a big opportunity for Australia with those data centres and productivity benefits through AI that they don't want to put a handbrake on. A few other things, the energy rebate. What are you picking up, Phil?
It sounds like they don't want to do it. The government has...
They don't want to renew then.
Yes. So since, just for the viewers, since 2022... what started as a temporary, power bill discount by the federal government, and in some cases was matched by the states, but the Commonwealth has spent $6.8 billion to date, giving us those non-means-tested discounts on our power bills. It's gone straight to the pockets of energy retailers, and it has helped mask the full impact of power prices. It's also artificially kept inflation low, and they're now, I think, you know, they've got to bite the bullet on that. Let inflation be what it really is, rather than
let it
artificially depressed. But it really goes to the budget. The budget is in all sorts of trouble in terms of, you know, there's a lot more going out than coming in.
And
to roll it over again, I think if you roll it over again, they start to become almost permanent, and they get harder to get rid of.
And that's true. It's harder to turn the tap off down the track.
But the danger is...
But there's a danger.
Ken Henry said if you've got something that's temporary and you're making it permanent, then maybe your settings are wrong. And
that's the point
where you turn the tap off. It could cause a bit of grief.
Well, energy prices, as we know, are a huge problem. Inflation's back over the band again, both headline and underlying inflation. So, you know, 6 months ago, only as recently as August, the government was making noises that we'd sort of the worst may be over with cost of living. They started getting rid of a few things and increasing things like the deeming rate on pensions, saying inflation's now sort of back under control and it's all got it getting away from them again. So it will be solely a political decision, but it sounds like from what the Prime Minister was saying and the Treasurer a few days ago, they really don't want to run.
No, I think the clear impression is they're going to end this rebate. The gas market, Jacob, you're our resident expert on the gas.
You're a gas
for my sins, yeah.
What are they going to do in simple terms?
Well, in simple terms, they want to try and force more gas into the domestic market. The complicated bit is always how you do that without then distorting, say, investment in additional gas extraction. That's always been the real problem. It looks like they're thinking about, and they've been doing this for months and months and months, some sort of permitting system, export permitting system. If you supply a sufficient amount of gas into the domestic market, you get a green light then to fill the ships for offshore customers. The ones that don't do that don't get the export permit, and that's then a problem for some of those offshore customers. But the goal ultimately is to get energy bills down for households and businesses. That's really what it's about.
Well, that's what everyone would like to see. They've still got a hospital deal to settle with the states and territories, although I'm told that may stretch over the end of the year and into the first part of next year, at least before South Australian government goes into caretaker in February. Just listening to the PM, though, when it comes to this reform question, Sam, which is, you know, I think from 9 o'clock on election night, this question's been there. What's he going to do with this incredible majority that he's got, an opposition in disarray? What did you make of what Anthony Albanese is suggesting here about his plans for next year?
Well, I think that they do plan to roll out some new things and that the forum for that is going to be the budget. And I think that there is pressure for them to do that because they have this enormous, mandate, basically. They potentially could be in for two terms. And I think that there will start to be pressure building that they aren't doing enough with it.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll fill this.
Yeah, I can understand why the PM is cautious. I mean, I thought that was illustrative of what he was telling you. He hasn't used that language for a while about not eroding faith in everything. He said just because we got 94 seats on the night didn't give us a mandate to go out and make whoopee, you know, like do all this stuff. Where, I mean, all these people saying do this, do that, do everything. They only got a 34.8% primary vote. The PM is very conscious of that. Only got to drop a couple of points, and there's no whoopee, right? So it's they've been very judicious the year about sticking exactly to what they said they would do.
Yeah.
You know, to engender trust, to get a so they can take some things to the next election, but they've got to build that. They've got to build a goodwill.
You can do all of those things, but you can't govern in fear. Like the idea that we can never do anything.
I don't think it's fear. I think they're just being very methodical about it. And because
I also disagree with this notion that they're not quote unquote spending any political capital. Yeah. I think they're starting to do that. You never really recognise these things in the time they're happening. It's often when you look back. But I think the example of the environmental legislation,
yeah, big change.
That's some capital being spent right there. It's delivering a bunch of stuff that very progressive voters wanted, their own caucus wanted. But there is a cost. There will be a cost from some of the big pastoral interests, the mining interests. Sure, they don't vote for Labor normally, but they're noisy, they're powerful, they can have an effect. And the government's not worried about that. Well, it's worried in the sense that it's willing to take that risk.
And
that is really the definition of spending.
And could I just add to that? I mean, the energy transition, you know, for better or worse, it is where it is now.
And it's not easy.
I've been here since forever, and it was probably one of the hardest things the government's ever tried to do and to land it. And it's still not, you know, it's this painful period that they have to go through.
Come on, 1998 isn't forever. I've been here since then too. Yeah,
getting started. We're all just getting started.
Housing, you know, housing's a huge problem. So it's not like
they've got nothing to do.
They're sitting there going, what else could we do? They've got a fair bit on their
plate. On the other side of politics, let's talk about how Susan Lee and the opposition are finishing the year. Sam, what can we expect from Susan Lee over the summer? Will she be out there every day trying to hold on to her job?
I thought you would say, what can we expect from the Liberal Party? And I was going to say, absolute nonsense. Look, my sense is that Susan Lee is the best out of a not terribly impressive bunch.
What a rap.
And that won't save her because they're all going to be lining up to sort of take a chip at her. And I kind of think that there's lots of really interesting things about Andrew Hastie, but I don't think you could say on paper. He's never been a cabinet minister. He's never been the manager of opposition business, which is something I think he should go and do and learn about how Parliament operates, because I'm not completely convinced the current guy's much chop. And I don't think he can hide in Perth forever because it's giving me Mark Latham vibes. Remember how he sort of like had a sulk and got off the front bench and then waited for greatness? You know, I just think that they don't have, I mean, maybe, you know, the next Liberal Prime Minister is not in Parliament right now, but I think the real problem they've got is that they have such a tiny membership base now and they're so kind of radicalised.
Well, the next test for them is this immigration policy, Jacob. It's coming this week, apparently. What can we expect?
It is. Actually, I was sort of thinking more about the Liberal brand as it is nationally, and it's interesting. I don't think there's a lot of upside or good tidings for them federally, but at the state level, I think there is a bit of renewal going on. Jess Wilson
maybe
in Victoria, maybe New South Wales. You guys know
South Australia's not going too great.
They're moving. They're trying new things. They're putting younger people in. They're putting women
they
in.
They put ladies in when they think they can't win.
Yeah. We're in trouble.
We'll see.
Put a woman in charge. But you wrote, Phil, too, about this week about the talk and the moves towards possibly a new, party?
It's everything and nothing that's going on, right? There's a lot of... There's parallel discussions happening sort of amongst the Teal movement and associated sort of fellow travellers, and then amongst former moderate Liberals. And this has been going on for a while, Dave, since the election. And the common denominator, as was told me, is one of despair, that there's just this belief that they can't win the next election. And if they keep going to the right, they may not ever get back into power. Sort of terms like single-party states. Yeah, they point to Victoria,
South Australia,
the ACT, Western Australia, where there's just no prospect of a Liberal government in the foreseeable future. And in the case of Victoria, where you start to get really bad government now because they just haven't had an effective opposition there for a decade. Yeah. You know, that saying, good oppositions make good government, and there's a fear that could happen federally. So people are just talking quite audibly amongst themselves
about what can we do.
Is it a movement? Is it a Senate strategy?
But the problem is they're still in this self-harm phase, right, where the evidence is in of what has happened with, the way things went with Peter Dutton. And I think there's a really significant constituency in the Liberal Party that don't care. They would rather have control of the party from the far right and be completely unelectable. It's more important to them than winning government.
And so these people who are having these discussions aren't of that mindset. So, I mean, someone sent me a picture the day of Steele Hall, when he led the split in South Australia, I think, in 1973, when the moderates split from the Conservative Liberals in South Aussie for a couple of years, and there's this post of Steele had end the extremes, and no one's talking about a split in the Liberal Party. No one's talking about a new Liberal movement or a Liberal movement like we saw 50 years ago. That's too. And no one actually in the party is really of that view, but it's sort of say everything old is new again. I think it's the closest it's been to that point in five decades.
There's also a parallel discussion on the right as well, with this sort of one nation, what's it going to do? Does it pick up some of the sort of resources that someone like Clive Palmer put into elections? Does it find a new figurehead?
Consolidating
New England
the right.
or whatever it is. Yeah, whatever form it takes. I think this has been deep in the discussion, really. I agree with Phil throughout the coalition conservative side. Since the election, they need to find a way. And you kind of almost need a bunch of splits, Liberal Party splits, National Party splits, far-right splits to try to...
But then just fragments the right vote. Yeah.
Well, let's get some final observations, Phil.
I'm going to make an anti-prediction, David, and buttressed by the Prime Minister telling you it's the stuff we don't know that's going to happen yet that we're going to watch out for, because I think this time last year there was a very general view that we might be in for a hung parliament that by Christmas this year that Anthony Albanese was going to get rolled for his job. So it just sort of shows how different things can change and how quickly. So I'm going to predict I have no idea what will be happening this time next year.
the known unknown. I like it, Sam.
I love it. Look, I think that one of the big tests for the government is all about health and Medicare. It was such a huge issue during the campaign. Not clear whether they're going to be able to land a new hospitals agreement before Christmas. They've got a lot of pressures in terms of the changes they want to make to the NDIS. Too many old people sitting in hospital beds rather than aged care beds. So big challenge for the health minister.
Yeah, Jacob.
Now that everyone has to get off social media over the summer, go and buy some books. And I'd recommend the Australian Political Book of the Year by Claire Wright. Nakudaruk, I think I've got that wrong. It's the story of the Yirrkala bark petitions. Fascinating book. It's
I
got
thought
everything.
You were going to say
resources,
book.
land.
No, I am planning to read that myself over the summer. Terrific writer. So no, good suggestion. Thank you all very much everything during the year, and including this final episode.
Merry Christmas.
Yeah, Merry Christmas. A big thank you to the Insiders team, of course, for another huge year. To our former executive producer, Sam Clark, and our acting EP throughout much of this year, Jordan Butler. Thank you both for steering the ship and bringing out the best in everyone. To Georgia Cranko, Holly Tregenza, and everyone else who's worked on the editorial team, thanks for the discussions, the ideas that we have. Ryan Malcolm and our team of directors, the amazing editors, creative team, studio crew, makeup team, Arthur Hill, our floor manager over there as well. The one and only Mike Bowers, all of his Talking Pictures guests, and Fiona Katauskas for pulling it all together. Thank you so much. And, of course, the wonderful panellists who make this show what it is with your insights and analysis. Most of all, thanks to you at home for spending your Sunday mornings with us. Stay safe over the holidays. We'll be back before Parliament resumes in the new year, and we'll leave you with a look back at a huge year in politics. Thanks for watching.
Your vote has never been more important.
And I am up for the job.
More tax relief.
Our Prime Minister Anthony Albanese!
Ready to go?
Ready?
Born ready.
Very excited.
Yeah, it's a big year ahead.
Everyone good?
Good to go, Camus.
Adam, good morning.
Good morning.
Keep smiling. You all set to go, folks?
Ready to rock and roll?
Morning, everyone.
Yeah, let's get the show on the road.
Rotten, stinking, extinction salmon.
A stinky little fish.
Yeah, hair's all right.
My fellow Australians, on the 3rd of May, you choose the way forward.
Well, this election is a choice.
Your vote has never been more important, and your choice has never been more clear.
Is are you better off today? Is our country better off today than 3 years ago?
Here we go.
I feel I'm on a roll now.
What could go wrong? Protect us from Tim Trump.
Too aggro and too reckless.
Oh, got him.
We're not going to apologise for having a strong leader.
Where's Albanese?
Gentlemen, good evening.
Anthony, your government has modelled negative gearing changes and CGT changes. Well, the Treasurer has done that.
That's not right.
We can't argue. Listen, you two.
One down, 13,500,024 to go.
Medicare card.
If we don't win this booth, we're in real trouble.
I voted for him.
Please welcome my dear friend, our Prime Minister Anthony Albanese.
This beautiful Canberra day.
The party rebuilds from here.
The new leader of our Liberal Party is Susan Ley.
I am humbled. I am honoured. People elected us to get shit done.
Australia's Prime Minister.
They expect to see a statesman, not a factional assassin.
Mr. Walls, do you have Ed Husic's blood on your hands?
No. We will not be re-entering a coalition agreement with the Liberal Party.
It is disappointing.
It's with great disappointment.
Well, good afternoon. David and I have reached agreement formally to reform the coalition.
Bulls. Woo!
There is something very liberating about being on the backbench.
Now, let's get to work.
Solomon Puggy, ready to go?
It's a great honour to be here at the Great Wall of China. Here in London.
Here in Liverpool. Here in Malaysia.
We are now at the UN showing our world-leading laws.
We're calling time on social media, not taking responsibility. Effective today, Sunday, the 21st of September 2025, the Commonwealth of Australia recognises the state of Palestine.
I think it's actually shameful.
We're very close to a deal in the Middle East.
Our recognition was part of, contributed to that momentum.
President Trump, sir, your message to the people of Australia.
We are great friends and we're great allies.
I don't like you either. I don't, and probably never will.
To see the Prime Minister actually laughing at his own ambassador, I think it's untenable.
Nicole is probably a little bit churlish.
But the cost of inaction will always outweigh cost of action.
Cost of action on this government's watch is costing us an arm and a leg.
I just don't understand what is going through the minds of these dudes.
Australia's 2035 emissions target be 62 to 70%.
Emissions projections show that additional work will be needed to get to the 2035 target.
We don't believe in setting targets at all from opposition or from government.
So we had essentially the announcement of withdrawal from Paris.
What I meant to say was that I don't support the targets that the government sets while we're in opposition, so I misspoke.
I do think Susan is losing support.
Are you planning to roll her?
Absolutely.
Great day for us, I think, to rip this band-aid off, to dump Labor's net zero agenda.
Make no mistake, we're not pursuing net zero.
Well, hello everybody.
The beautiful environment. A good day for the environment. We promised we would reform Australia's broken environmental laws.
A dirty deal done with the Greens Party.
We are the true opposition in this country.
Senator Hanson-Young and Senator Waters were prepared to be flexible.
So nice to the Greens. This is economy wrecking, Mr. Right. Speaker.
Speaker, while I'd love to keep the place running, wishing everyone a Merry Christmas and see you in 2026, I'll move that the House to now adjourn.
The House stands adjourned.